Phil Mason the Show. Phil Mason Show is on. Is on in five. In five. Four. Four. Three. Three. Two. Two. One. One.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We're going to talk a little NBA basketball tonight. We're going to talk NFL Draft Combine, and we're going to look at the quarterbacks and who we think are going to be drafted. But up first, the San Antonio Spurs have been decimated by injuries this entire year. Their starting five that most of us associate anyway with the starting five haven't played very much, and they're trying to put their rotations together. And here to make sense of all that, from poundingtherock.com, please welcome Michael Erler to the show. Michael, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
We're going to get this right eventually, I think. This storm is making everything go wacky today, and I hate it. Anyhow, the Spurs, when we talk about the San Antonio Spurs, or most people do, they associate as a starting lineup, or at least this is where they started the season. Duncan, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker, and Tiago Splitter. And the interesting thing about it is because of injuries and all sorts of different things, they've played a total of 18 games together for an average of 8.7 minutes per game. That is low, isn't it?
Yeah, it's low. It's low even for them. I mean, last year, they played about 12 minutes together, pretty much just the first 6 minutes of each half. And, you know, that's a lot less than, you know, a lot of starting fives that you associate, you know, when you pick your teams that you kind of, you know, you associate those starting fives. And the league leading numbers for teams like Portland, Indiana, Memphis, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, teams where, you know, they're five best players and then a big drop off to that sixth guy. Those teams play about 18 minutes, 20 minutes together. Because, you know, they play the first 7 minutes of each half, and then they have a little the same lineup to close out, you know, tight ball games in the fourth quarter. The Spurs traditionally, last 5-6 years, haven't really done that because, I mean, of course, you have Manu Ginobili, who's one of their best players, and he doesn't start, but, you know, he closes out ball games for you. And also, you know, Boris Diaw is a little bit more versatile than Tiago Splitter. I think Pop kind of trusts him a little bit more. So oftentimes he plays down the stretch. And if not him, then they might just go small ball period and just play with like four wing guys and just Tim Duncan. So Tiago Splitter doesn't really often close out games for the Spurs either. So that's starting five, you know, usually last year they play about 12 minutes together. And then this year that number's dropped to 8.7 minutes together because, for a while there, you know, Danny Green was really cold. So Pop benched him in favor of Marco Bellinelli and he was in the starting lineup. And then after that, they had all their injuries for the past 2 months where really nobody's been healthy for them outside of Tim Duncan as far as their named players go. And it's kind of funny. Like, I think yesterday Pop was trying to make up for lost time. I mean, not yesterday, against Sunday against Dallas. He played the starting five 19 minutes, 18 seconds together, which has to be one of the, you know, most they've ever locked together. And, you know, that's almost 40% of that's a 40% of a ball game. And even with that 19 minutes and 18 seconds together, it's only brought up their average to 8.7. So imagine what that average was before the 1918. So just the amount of time they spent together against Dallas was 12.2% of their whole season total, and we're in game 59 now.
Yeah, that's just wild. But a lot of it has to do, too, even if they were healthy, Greg Popovich just does things like that, doesn't he? He runs with all kinds of rotations. He's always testing things out and testing things out. And testing things out. And it'll drive you crazy if you watch them every day. Or if you're the casual fan and catch them every so often, it's almost confusing. But you said small ball. Now, what would be a small ball lineup for you?
Well, I guess you'd argue whether Boris Diaw constitutes small ball or not, because he's kind of a tweener size. I mean, he's only 6'9". So, you know, he's not a traditional big man, you know, a traditional power forward. But, I mean, I think he's versatile enough to defend, you know, the stretch power forwards in the league or, you know, small forwards. I mean, last year you saw in the finals, I mean, they had him on LeBron a bunch of the time. So, you know, I think, but, I mean, for me, a small ball lineup, like a real small ball lineup would be Kawhi Leonard at the four. And then, you know, three out of the four of, you know, Danny Green, Manu Ginobili, Marco Bellinelli, and Tony Parker. So you figure Tony Parker will be in there. So basically two out of three of Ginobili, Bellinelli, and Danny Green.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, the lineup that's played together the most this season is Boris Diaw, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard, and Tony Parker. They've played together 30 games, but have only averaged like 4.6 minutes per game. But they've been quite successful as a team, at least defensively, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what I'm talking about. I think that's kind of the lineup Pop prefers to close games, the quote-unquote clutch lineup. But, I mean, you know, their net rating together is 7.3, which is pretty good. Not dominant. They've had a couple of better lineups actually in there. But I think that's the five guys that Pop really trusts when it comes down to it.
Now, what would your favorite, what would your lineup be if you were the coach? What would you put out there as a small ball?
Well, I don't know if I would go small ball, but I think I'm inclined to agree with Pop. I think down the stretch, those five guys would be the five I would go to. Or, you know, maybe in some situations, depending on who you're facing, I would put Thiago in there instead of Boris Diaw. But I would definitely play Leonard and Ginobili and Parker. And maybe if the other team is super small, you'd have to put Bellinelli in there or Danny Green instead of Boris Diaw. But, you know, the other guys, I think it's pretty set. I think the four guys are set. You know, Leonard, Duncan, Parker, Ginobili. I don't think that's a controversial statement at all that those four have to be on the floor. And sometimes here and there, there have been a few cases where Pop has benched Kawhi Leonard down the stretch in favor of somebody like Marco Bellinelli. And it has driven me crazy. Their defense gets so much worse without Kawhi Leonard on the floor that I can't fathom how Pop would ever elect to not have him on the floor.
Well, he probably does that when he's trying to score more points, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the situations where he's done it, I mean, they haven't really been trailing. They've been like, it's been a, you know, one possession game, or they've been up a couple points, down a couple points. It hasn't been this desperate situation where, oh, they're down 10 with 5 minutes to go. We need to get Kawhi Leonard off the floor.
That's fair enough. Now, here's another lineup that's played together quite a bit. Marco Bellinelli, Boris Diaw, Tim Duncan, Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker. Now, that's more of your ideal small ball lineup right there. They played a total of 15 games together and averaged about 4.3 minutes per game, per time together on the floor. Popovich would drive you crazy, won't he?
Well, I mean, he likes to experiment. I think the Spurs' blessing and their curse, you know, their strength or their weakness, however you want to put it, is that they have nine guys who, you know, really aren't, you know, significantly better or worse than one another. I mean, that's why, you know, the Spurs don't necessarily get as much attention as, you know, some of the other teams, you know, out there, like media attention, just because they don't have that one guy who's just head and shoulders above, you know, everybody in the league. And, you know, that's why they don't necessarily get all the all-star love. I mean, Tony Parker hasn't had as good of a season this year as last year. Tim Duncan's dropped off slightly, not too much. I mean, he started the season really terrible for like the first 3 weeks. And then ever since then, he's been Tim Duncan. But, you know, they don't have, you know, a LeBron or a Kevin Durant, you know, just somebody just putting up monster numbers. And the strength of the Spurs is their strength collectively, 1 through 9, where any of them is liable to put up, you know, 15 points, 20 points and win a game for you. And I think you saw that in the Rodeo Road Trip where they had all these injuries, but Patty Mills was averaging 20 points a game and pulling out some of these games where, you know, Tony Parker was out. And, you know, they've had games this season where Marco Bellinelli has, you know, saved their bacon and he's, you know, scored 30 points or in the high 20s. They've had games where, you know, Danny Green's made a bunch of three-pointers. They've had games where, you know, Boris Diaw has hit a bunch of shots. He's a lot more aggressive this year than in past seasons as far as shooting the ball, and he could score inside or outside. He's probably their most effective post scorer these days. So they have just that's their strength. It's just their versatility of 1 through 9. And I don't know if that's going to necessarily work in the playoffs, because in the playoffs it usually comes down to, you know, the best player or the best couple players. But, you know, anybody on the Spurs 1 through 9 can beat you, and that's how they do it. That's how Pop prefers it. They're not an isolation one on five kind of team.
No, they sure aren't. And the thing is too is, I would venture to guess that Duncan or Leonard or Parker could put up those monster numbers, but they only play so much. They don't. When you compare them to like Blake Griffin, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kevin Love, Carmelo Anthony, these guys are playing 32, 33 minutes a game. you will never hardly ever, or I should say hardly ever see a San Antonio Spurs player, unless it's in the playoffs, playing more than 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, I mean, Pop really likes to save those guys, especially, you know, Duncan, who's almost 38 years old, and Ginobili, who's, 36 himself. And Parker, you know, he's traditionally played Parker, you know, a little bit more, like, you know, 32, 34 in the past, but he's getting up there in age himself. He's now 31, and an old 31, considering he came into the league as an 18-year-old. So this is his 13th, 14th season. Plus, not only did he take the team to the finals last year, and, you know, there were stretches last year in the regular season where people were talking about Tony Parker as an MVP candidate, because for 2 months in the middle of the season, when Ginobili was struggling with injuries and Duncan was struggling with injuries, Parker single-handedly carried his team. And in the offseason, he played in the Euro Championships, and he carried France to the gold medal there. So he's just played so much basketball that he's been worn out. So I think this year Pop is the cut down Tony's minutes, and then he benched him for 6 games, you know, to really rest him, because he's been beat up, you know, all over his body, like with minor injuries. So I think they're really, you know, trying to save everybody this year. And, you know, having Marco Bellinelli and having a more aggressive Boris Diaw, and having a better, you know, more in shape Patty Mills, you know, this year than last year, it's kind of given him the versatility and the freedom to do that, because they just have more guys who can score now.
Yeah, they sure do. That bench, Patty Mills has had a pretty nice little run, and that's just it. Now, I wanted to ask you something. What about Tony Parker and all this playing he does in the summer, and then he played the All-Star game, and then he misses a bunch of games afterwards? What do you like? What do you think about that? Because there's a school of thought, and I'm one of them, actually, that thinks that these guys should make a choice. Either go play for your national team, or you play for my team. I pay you. You're under contract. I pay you. I don't want you playing all those games, risking injury, or in Tony Parker's case, coming back just completely burned out and missing ball games.
Well, I think that's another one of those blessing and a curse kind of arguments, you know, because in one sense, the Spurs have a much, you know, a very international team, you know, more than the average NBA team. And what you get when you have a team full of international players, by and large, and maybe this is generalizing, is you have a team of professional adults. You know, not only do they know how to play the game the right way, where, you know, they can shoot the ball, that they're responsible for each other, they play unselfishly, they're not raised in the American AAU culture where everything is one-on-one. You know, these guys know how to play together, you know, as a team. But what you also get is just guys don't get in trouble off the floor. You know, and guys don't argue with their coaches, they don't pout. You know, that's why people don't pay attention to the Spurs, because there's never any controversy with them. You never hear a peep out of this team off the floor. And but the negative in that regard in having a team of international players is that they're more likely to have, you know, commitments in the off season as far as playing international basketball, because it's very important to those guys. They've all grown up, you know, dreaming of playing, you know, first and foremost for their teams internationally, because as children, that was, like, you know, what they were exposed to. You know, it's just a part of international culture is to play for your national team. And I think a lot of the American guys, you know, the superstars, who are good enough to do that, you know, they enjoy it too, to a certain extent. It's just that, the culture was a little different, you know, for most of the, you know, before 1992, Americans, you know, once you were out of college and once you turned professional, you weren't allowed to play international basketball. And only since 1992, it's changed. So now you have this generation of players, you know, who grew up in the 90s. This is all they've known. So I think for a lot of the American guys, like Kevin Durant and that generation of players, you know, I think they feel the same pressure, you know, to play in international tournaments, and, you know, almost as much as the European guys do. But I think for the generation before that, it just wasn't thought about in the same extent, because kids just look forward to playing in the NBA, you know, as American kids. But, you know, now that the 80s are over, now we're in the 21st century, you know, it's all American kids have known as well. So I think they also enjoy playing in international tournaments.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But these guys, the European guys, play a lot more than American guys do. I mean, as soon as the season's over, they play in national friendlies and international friendlies, playing for the national team. And to me, I don't know. I see the good in it, of course. I understand how much pride these guys have and want to play because that's all they really had when they were coming up. I mean, Tony Parker and them weren't dreaming of playing in the NBA. I mean, that was just a side benefit of the fact that they were international stars. But still in all, they do play a lot. I remember Mark Cuban was just livid with Dirk Nowitzki because he would always play for his national team. He would come back either hurt, burned out, or whatever. So I guess there's two sides of it. But the Spurs are making headway. They're trying to get there. And we'll keep up with this rotation business and see how it goes. Michael, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Michael Oehler, and you can find him over at poundingtherock.com. Coming up next, Joe Mullinax and I will take a look at the NFL combines, and more importantly, we're going to take a look at the top quarterbacks coming out of college and maybe try to figure out where they're going to go. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean? That's got to
sure.
be a big, strong big, thing. Strong
oh, that's thing. Gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to philnasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at draftstreet.com today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Read what happens when an Orange County housewife decides she likes another man more than her husband. Join Brooklyn through her struggles in this coming-of-age saga filled with full-blown drama and real-life secrets that are no longer kept. Two great novels, one great author. You can find Brooklyn and Beau Chronicles at BrendaPerlin.com. That's www.BrendaPerlin.com.
Great books and interviews with the authors that write them are featured on the Writer Showcase podcast. I invite you to check it out at thewritershow.wordpress.com. Fantasy Baseball Weekly is a weekly baseball podcast with a fantasy owner in mind. We give you tips, tricks, tools, and everything else we can think of to help you win your league. You can catch us at fantasybaseballweekly.wordpress.com or on philnasons.com. Come check us out.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
here are some words of wisdom from Mr. Know-It-All.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The NFL draft, the combines have
concluded. And tonight we're going to talk about the quarterbacks. And joining me to do just that from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, please welcome Joe Mullinax to the Phil Nason Show. Joe, what's up? How are you, man?
I'm doing okay, Phil. I'm doing pretty well. Enjoying this beautiful weather here in Memphis. We were just talking about I flew back to Virginia. I'm originally from Virginia, and I just barely beat in the winter storm warning. So we're dealing with some ice here in Memphis. But I'm happy to be on and happy to talk some football with you.
And we're happy to have you here. We're trying to get this done and taken care of before the actual draft.
Yeah, exactly.
And I got to tell you, the combines are finished, and we'll talk about some of the better or the guys who were a little more successful later on. But one of the listeners wanted us to talk about quarterbacks, and I thought this would be a good time to do that before we really start to take a look at who's going to go where and to who. Quarterbacks are very essential. They're usually the face of the franchise. There are teams out there who are looking for quarterbacks. One of the guys that they're talking about the most, and this is something that I hadn't heard anywhere else but on this show from you, when you just kind of snuck it in there, I think the Houston Texans may wind up with Johnny Football. Now, what do you think about that, you said 3 weeks ago, and after the combine, more and more people are starting to opine the same thing?
Well, I appreciate that, Phil, and I kind of had that opinion even before I saw it from this guy I'm about to reference, but I got to give credit to, you might have some listeners, Mel Kiper has also been kind of putting it out there, maybe Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel will go to the Houston Texans, but I agreed with Mel, and we came up with that opinion around the same time. To me, it just made sense in terms of Houston maybe trying to put some butts in seats, trying to reinvigorate their football team through Johnny Football. But Johnny Football, you either love him or you hate him. You think that he can't play at all and he's going to fail in the NFL like Ron Jaworski does of ESPN, or you think he's capable of being a franchise quarterback like somebody like Mel Kiper does. And it's so interesting that he's so, you know, polarizing. And the last time there was somebody this polarizing was a few years ago with Tim Tebow. Do you think he's going to be successful in the NFL? Do you think he's not? Now, I think that's where the comparison ends when it comes between Tebow and Manziel, because Manziel, I feel like, has more quarterback skill. He has a stronger, more accurate arm, and his speed is impressive. He ran a 4.68 at the combine just recently. He was also the top performer in the three cone drill as well as the 20-yard shuttle. That's impressive. That means that he's athletic. That means that he's agile. He can move. And if you watch the tape on Johnny Manziel, you can see that. He's one of the more athletic, agile guys coming out in this year's draft. The question with him is partially his height, which to me still doesn't make a ton of sense. You have guys like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson winning Super Bowls and having success in the league, and then you question somebody's height. That doesn't matter as much anymore, or it really shouldn't. He doesn't necessarily fit that mold of a 6'4", 6'3", 220-pound stud, you know, kind of like a Blake Bortles does of UCF. But what he does is he's a competitor. And I remember watching, I was in the airport, and I was watching a clip of the John Gruden quarterbacks camp that he does, QB camp. I love those because Gruden's a brilliant quarterback mind. And he sits down and he watches film with these quarterbacks. And the piece of film that he shows of Johnny Manziel is him throwing an interception in a game and then chasing down the guy who picked it off before he could score a touchdown and tackling him. And that's a play, when you see a quarterback do that kind of stuff, it shows intangibles. It shows leadership. It shows that he is a competitor. And that is what you want more than anything. Somebody that has that will to win and is willing to do anything to win. What will that translate to? Is that worth the number one pick? I don't know. I'm glad I'm not a GM having to make that choice, especially with Jadeveon Clowney, the defensive end, sitting there at the top of everybody's board. But Manziel is a tremendous talent, in my opinion. I think that he's explosive. I think he's a game changer. And I think if you put him in the right system, and that's what people need to make sure they're keeping an eye on when it comes to the draft, whatever the quarterback may be, as long as they are a good fit in the system, they will have success. If you took Ben Roethlisberger and you put him in the Redskins system from a couple of seasons ago, the first season of RG3, where with the read option and running and all that, he wouldn't have the success that a Griffin would. So it's all about tailoring your scheme to the talent you have. And with Johnny Manziel, you're getting an explosive athlete who makes things happen on the field. Is that worth the first overall pick? It'll be interesting to see.
Those are all good points. You know, Ron Jaworski is someone I have a great deal of respect for. But to be honest with you, the NFL's changed since he was in it. And one of the things that quarterbacks need to do, now, Jaworski was a drop-back passer. Most of the guys in his era and the eras after. But times have changed. And this kid makes plays, doesn't he, Joe? He goes out there and makes plays, and he's got monster hands. Now, he might not make some great decisions off the field, but I've seen him make some pretty good decisions on the field. And I think, honestly, Houston, this is a perfect marketing thing, not to mention a good thing football-wise, but off the field as well, right?
I think so. I think that it's smart from a financial standpoint for them. They had a rough year this year when a lot of people were expecting them to have success. So it's an opportunity for them to reinvigorate their franchise, to move on from Matt Schaub. And Johnny Manziel is the anti-Matt Schaub. Schaub is a good drop back passer, but he was kind of statue in the pocket. He couldn't move around. If you got pressure to him, it was easy squeezy. With Manziel, you bring pressure. To me, he reminds me of a more athletic Tony Romo. And it pains me as a Redskins fan to say that. But he is an athlete back there, and he just makes things happen. He is a creator on the football field, and he's a competitor. Like I said, as a coach and as somebody who watches a lot of football, I love the guys who are competitive, who desire to win and above all else, and Manziel is one of those guys. Now, to somebody like a Teddy Bridgewater or a Blake Bortles or even a Derek Carr from Fresno State who's starting to climb up some boards, do they maybe have more sound techniques, and do they maybe have better releases throwing the football? Possibly, if you break down the film. And like you said, Jaws, I mean, he lives and breathes football and watches that film like it's his job, because it is. But he has a great opinion, and it's an informed opinion, and he is low on Manziel. But I just, from watching that kid in college, he's somebody that just wins football games, man. And he has an explosive arm, explosive legs. He's an athlete. And I think he's going to have some success in the NFL.
I agree with you. I think he will, too. I would have liked to see him stay in school another year, but that's just my own personal preference, and I shouldn't really, you know, project that onto anyone else. Another quarterback, actually the one that people like Jaworski like a lot, is Teddy Bridgewater. Now, what do you think is going to happen? We kind of both believe that Manziel will wind up with Houston. But in all likelihood, Teddy Bridgewater may be the better quarterback long-term in the NFL, right?
I think so. He has more of those traditional tools, whether as an accurate passer in the pocket. And as you watch the NFL and you look around, you need that kind of talented player. Obviously, they may not be to the level of a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning. Those are two all-time greats, but those are two guys that can stand in the pocket, they can get rid of the ball fast. And you'll keep hearing that as a point of emphasis from draft analysts, folks. The fact of getting rid of the ball quickly and making quick decisions, being a quick decision maker, that's important, because if you're not able to make those quick decisions, 3 seconds, you're getting hit in the backfield as a quarterback in the NFL. There are just too many athletes coming off the edge. Too many defenses are drafting guys like a Jadeveon Clowney, who their job is to get to the quarterback and make sure that they can't make plays. That's the best way to disrupt a quarterback, is to get pressure on them. Seattle proved that against Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. If you're able to get into the pocket and disrupt his rhythm and his flow, he's not going to be as successful. So if you're able to do that, you want a quarterback who gets rid of the ball quickly. That's one of the worries about Manziel. Does he pull and run it too much? It goes along with RG3, similar kind of issues. Bridgewater is kind of the prototype in terms of that kind of passer. But a concern with Bridgewater, and it's similar with a concern for Bortles, is the quality of competition. Manziel played against the SEC. There's no question about the competition he went against. He played the best of the best of the best. But in the American Athletic Conference, there's not necessarily as much to compete against. And then obviously before that, it was the Big East. And for UCF, it was Conference USA. Not as much to really go up against in terms of competition. So how tested is Bridgewater really? Is he prepared for what he's going to see in terms of speed at the NFL level? That's a fair question. And none of these quarterbacks really are guys that you expect to come in and make an immediate impact. They're not like Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin III. They're not that kind of player. They're guys that probably will need a year or two under their belts before they get a feel for what the NFL game is like. And as that goes forward, it'll be interesting to watch Bridgewater. Where he winds up in any of these quarterbacks is important to the overall fit and feel of how their careers are going to turn out.
I like Bridgewater, but you know what? He is kind of small, I think. And to me, he's very slender. And I'm wondering what's going to happen when he takes that big blindside hit. You know, the clownies of the world are going to come after him. And will he be able to hold up? But he has a nice arm. It's not the best arm in the business, but it's still a quality NFL arm. I like this kid a lot. As a passer, I like him more than Manziel, to tell you the truth.
Absolutely. And I think that when it comes to – he doesn't have the shiftiness of a Manziel, and he doesn't have the size of a Blake Bortles. So it'll be interesting to see how he's able to adapt. Like you said, he needs to put on a little bit of weight. Not bad weight. He doesn't need to go buy a bag of Oreos or anything. But he needs to get in the weight room, add on some good muscle mass so that he can endure the rigors of a 16-game NFL schedule.
Yeah, that's just it. And you know what? They'll fatten him up because this is a kid that's going to go in the first round, right? I'm sure he's in the first round somewhere. Maybe Jacksonville? Sure.
I think that's probably accurate. I think you could see him going to Houston. I stand by my Manziel pick, but I wouldn't be surprised if Bridgewater wound up in Houston. And there's so many teams at the top of this draft that need quarterback help that it wouldn't surprise me in the least to see a guy like a Derek Carr from Fresno State get taken in the top 8 to 12 picks, when in reality his grade might be a second-round grade. I mean, Johnny Manziel, according to Todd McShay from ESPN and Scouts.com, He's a lower first round grade, and we're talking about Manziel as the first overall pick. So a lot of times it comes down to a debate between need and fit. How badly do you need a position, or how badly do you want to take the top overall player at that position? Do you take the best available, or do you take the best available at a position of need? And that's been a debate in any draft, whether it's NFL, NBA, across the board. Since they've been drafting, you take the best available or the best fit at a position of need.
I agree with you. But I like this kid. Either way, whoever picks him is going to get a winner, whether it's the first pick, the third pick, fifth pick, whatever. He's a winner. You know who else I like is Blake Bortles. Now, I think he's probably the second best, at least according to Mel Kiper. He's the second best quarterback, right? So, I mean,
he is.
We have a couple minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about Bortles. See, we can talk all day about this, Joe.
Well, the draft is fun to talk about for sure. And Bortles is a tremendous, once again, an athletic kid, a bigger kid. He's able to run, and he's kind of got that prototypical size that you look for. He's got a cannon for an arm. And the question with him is he might be one of the ones who's more of a project. Do you take him and do you thrust him in to the Wolves, so to speak? To me, that would be a mistake, because this is a kid who reminds me a good bit of, you know, a quarterback who needs time, who needs to have a chance. Not to say that you don't grow from playing time, obviously, but this is a kid who needs to get with a coach who can work with him one-on-one all the time. When you're a professional, it's even different from playing in college. I mean, it's your job, literally. You're there all the time. There's no classes you have to worry about. There's nothing like that. So continuing to work on footwork, the techniques of the actual position, continuing to refine his game. I would say Teddy Bridgewater is more refined at this point than Blake Bortles. But if we're talking about raw potential, I think Bortles is probably the best in this draft because of his size, because of his ability to move, his ability to run.
Oh, he's a triple threat. There's no question about it. And he's a tall kid, too, and he's a big kid. This is just something that we're going to continue on and on and on about, Joe. I got to wrap this up, but thank you so much for being on the show with me. Great stuff as always, my friend. Great stuff.
Thank you so much for having me on. Always happy to be on, Phil. You know that.
I know that. And we're going to try to get you back here next week because we've got a lot to talk about. I can see this is going to take longer than I had thought. Anyhow, that was Joe Mullinax. You can find him. He writes NBA basketball over at grizzlybearblues.com. But he's also a football coach, and as you can tell, he knows his stuff. Coming up next, Zeb Benbrook and I will be talking about the Golden State Warriors and some other news and opinions of the NBA. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
You are a meathead, dead from the neck up.
After these brief messages.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24-7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels. You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannbernal.com. That's www.maryannbernal.com. Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author Kay Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. Kay Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmedor.com. That's authorkmedor.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
It freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Shut up! Shut up!
Yes! Shut up!
Shut up! You're telling me to shut up?
Please! Just shut up! I am so sick of hearing you talking, talking, talking all the time. Don't you ever just shut up?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Golden State Warriors are still on this crazy road trip, and here to talk all about them and maybe a little more NBA talk Please welcome Zeb Benbrook to the show. Zeb, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Doing great. Thanks for having me on again.
It's my pleasure. We're having a monster storm here, and the it's just nasty. So there's a little funny sounds in the background, but it's all good. We'll get through it, and it'll be what it is. But Golden State, I got to tell you, Steph Curry on the 28th, man, against the Knicks, he killed them. That triple-double, he had a triple-double like with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. And no one seemed to want to try to stop him. That kid is on a roll, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, but there is also the fact that that the Knicks are a really terrible team. I mean, I think you put it best when you say on your Facebook there are three things that the Knicks need to do in order to, or that somebody needs to do in order to beat the Knicks. They need to show up, get dressed, and take the floor. And that's all they need to do, three things. And that's what the Warriors did on the night against the Knicks. Stephen Curry was absolutely amazing, but I mean, he could be amazing when he's shooting in an open gym. I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to play him in a game of horse. So that's basically just what happened. I mean, he was, you know, fantastic as passing as always. The Warriors ran their offense. They ran through the motions, but I mean, you know, they could get whatever shot they wanted on that night. I mean, you know, the Knicks are all just playing for contracts at this point or their individual stats. I mean, there was no flow within them whatsoever. So, you know, it was just kind of dominating a bad team. So I'm not taking too much from it, but the fact that he got it in the third quarter, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Ah, you saw my Facebook status that night, eh?
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Pretty good, yeah.
I think it was right on target, too. That was the whole point. I want to go into a Knicks rant, really, but they're just pathetic, and it's a kind of a pity, really, because that's a team with so much promise and has such a decent roster if you really look at it, but they're just awful. But the Golden State Warriors, they are right now 2-2 on their road trip. They've got a couple of games remaining. They're playing Indiana while we record this on Tuesday, but they have Boston on the road, and then they come back and then home and play Atlanta on Friday, Phoenix on Sunday. There are people out there who are thinking, and I don't know if they're right or wrong, but they believe that the Golden State Warriors aren't going to make the playoffs. And we can look at that. We've been talking about that. What when you hear that sort of thing, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's just you just got to take every game on a case-by-case basis, and it's really hard to say whether the Warriors are good or bad at this point, because I think right now it's going to lie on this. I mean, the responsibility is going to lie on the shoulders of Klay Thompson and David Lee. Steph Curry isn't good enough to carry this team like Kevin Durant is good enough to carry the Thunder to be the best team in the Western Conference. I don't think Steph Curry can really carry this team very far on his own. He's got to have support from the second and third best scorers on the team. But Thompson and Lee really failed against the Raptors last Sunday. They just, Klay Thompson couldn't hit his open threes. He, you know, he's just not, there's just some games where he decides not to show up. And David Lee just couldn't convert at the rim. You know, the Raptors have a really good solid half court defense. So, you know, he had to battle for every single one of his points, and he just couldn't beat his defender. And when those two guys aren't scoring efficiently or at all, you know, they're playing really horribly, like they did that game, you know, you're not going to do that well. So I think that the responsibility lies on their shoulders. And if they can just kind of be productive on the right nights, then the Warriors can be, you know, as good as they'll take them.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I don't know if you had the opportunity to listen to Monday's show when we were talking fantasy basketball. And I labeled Klay Thompson one of my biggest disappointments in fantasy, because he's been so up and down. How much longer does Mark Jackson stick with this? Because things are getting tight now, and making the playoffs is everything. And if they don't make the playoffs, ooh, Maron, he's going to have a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, you know, who else you go to, though, because Harrison Barnes, he's kind of unreliable. You only use him in isolation sets. And who do you bring off the bench? You know, do you think Jordan Crawford's good enough to start at the two and score that much? I mean, he doesn't have that many go-to, you know, I mean, Jordan Crawford doesn't have that many go-to moves. You know, Steve Blake, he's a backup point guard. You can't play him next to Curry. And you can't, you know, there's nobody else you can kind of slot in that role. So the responsibility kind of lies on Thompson, because there's nobody else on the team to go with. But I can't really blame him for going to Thompson, but I do admire him for, you know, using Jermaine O'Neal more. And I think that when Jermaine O'Neal comes back from his current situation, that he'll be a definite help for the Warriors. So I think that will kind of mitigate Klay Thompson's badness. But I mean, I don't think there's just anything Coach Jackson can do. I mean, he's between a rock and a hard place, and they're kind of committed here. I mean, you can't. There's not that many other options.
Yeah, you'll look for a trade this fall or this summer. There's no question.
I hope so.
I think Klay Thompson is gone. But that's neither here nor there. He's there now. One of the things that was also mentioned about the Golden State Warriors, and I'll get your thoughts about this, is that Mark Jackson's not playing his starters as many minutes as he was earlier in the season. Is he pulling the resting routine, or is it because, like I opined, that Draymond Green has been so good off the bench that he's been able to rely on him a little bit more and give these guys some rest?
Well, I don't think it's Draymond Green. I think it's the acquisition of Steve Blake, Jordan Crawford, and having a full roster. I mean, once you've got once you're able to get more players deserving of playing time, then you know you can afford to rest your stars a little bit more. And the starters need rest because, I mean, those guys were playing really, really long minutes in an attempt to get rid of how bad our bench was. But now that we've got the solid bench acquisitions, that's definitely taking away the minutes. I don't think it's Draymond Green in particular. I think he's really off and on. A lot of Warrior fans really admire him for his defense, but his offense just kind of is here sometimes and it's not here other times. So I think it's just having a deeper bench.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. I know you followed them pretty closely. Now, they played Indiana yesterday, or they will in a little while for you and I. But coming up next, they've got Boston and Atlanta, two teams that are struggling. This is where they want to take care of business, right? I know they're going to be tired. It's the last game of a road trip. It's a back-to-back with Boston. But still in all, they have to go into the Garden and take care of business, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're going against the Celtics, they're a team that's, you know, gonna play really good, really tough defense, and you've got to kind of have an efficient offense. And they were able to have that against the Knicks a couple nights ago, but they weren't able to have that against Toronto. And Toronto's the type of team that really slows you down, gets you into those half-court sets, and the Celtics are going to kind of do the same thing. Luckily for us, they're hopefully trying to tank at this point, or continuing to try to tank. And I haven't done too much research into the Celtics specifically since the earlier part of the season, but I think that the Warriors definitely should be able to wrap it up against them.
Yeah, they should, but you know what? The Bombs Away boys have got to hit their shots. But yeah, I think Boston's kind of, you know, thrown in the towel, and rightly so. They had a great first half of the season, though. God bless them. But Atlanta's a team that really isn't tanking, but they just hit the skids. They've had injuries, Millsap's out, Horford's gone for the season, Jeff Teague's been up and down with injuries. That's a team that's decimated. That's a team that's coming into Golden State looking for a win. They want to make the playoffs, but that's a team that Golden State must beat. That's a must-win game on Friday night, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Atlanta's losing to everybody right now. When you're losing games to, you know, Boston, you know, you're giving up 107 points to Chicago. I mean, I know Chicago's been doing pretty well recently, but they still shouldn't be getting 107 points. And then 129 points to Phoenix. I mean, this team has completely lost their defensive mantra. A lot of their players were shaky to begin with. I think Coach Mike Budenholzer has done a great job using the personnel that he has. But now that Al Horford's out, they don't have a star. They're kind of relying on a lot of pieces to work together. And when you rely on so many different factors for you to perform well in order for you to win, you're just not going to win that many games because you got to have that solid rock that they just don't have. And the Warriors absolutely have to win against Boston and Atlanta, especially if they don't win against Indiana tonight.
Well, they're going to have a tough time with Indiana. That's going to be a really classic battle. But Phoenix is in town on Sunday, and they've been. At the time of this recording, they've won two in a row. They beat New Orleans and Atlanta, so they're beating the teams that they have to beat. Now, I said on this show on Friday that I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and here's why I say this, because on March the 4th, they played the Los Angeles Clippers, and I don't think they're going to win that. Then they have OKC on Thursday, and Golden State, then the Clippers, then Cleveland. That's a tough stretch right there where they're going to have problems. And people didn't look at that very closely when everyone jumped on their bandwagon. but I didn't jump. Now, that's a big game, though. But that's going to still be a very big game for Golden State because you got these two teams, one 8th seed, one 6th seed. Who knows where they'll be by Friday or by Sunday. That's another must-win game. Just about everything on this schedule is either must-win or must-compete for Golden State, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you get down to the nitty-gritty in the Western Conference race, I mean, it's every single game counts. I mean, the Warriors haven't been involved in a lot of tight races, you know, because they don't make the playoffs a lot. But I have followed the Thunder a lot when they were in that tight race a couple of years ago for the 4th through 8th seed, and it was really close. And, you know, it really comes down to these games late in the season when they're matching up, because you could turn on the playoffs and kind of see how things are going to shake out. But it's cool when you get a lower sorry, I lost my train of thought. It's cool when you get a lower seed. I totally lost my train of thought, but it's cool. When you get to watch these matchups later in the season, it's really a playoff predictor. It's a really great playoff predictor, and you know, and who's going to get into a higher seed and who's going to get into a lower seed. Whew, I'm sorry. Whew, I lost.
Come on, young fella, hang in there. But honestly, seriously, you're right. This is a playoff predictor. Phoenix is going to tell us how good they are in the next 10 days. That's what it's going to tell us. Golden State is going to do the same thing. And then next week, it's going to be much more difficult. They've got Dallas, the Clippers, Cleveland, who's playing a lot better right now, and Portland. So they've got a tough stretch ahead then, too. And it could get down to the nitty-gritty. Dallas is looking like a team that might sneak their way in just because of this. I think that Golden State has enough of the goods to hold on, but, man, they have got to win on Friday, and they have got to win on Sunday against Phoenix.
Yeah, absolutely. It just comes down to these must-win games at the end of the season. And if you don't win them and you don't get into a higher seed in the Western Conference, then you're out in the beginning, because there's going to be some tough teams at the top, and the teams at the top are always better. I mean, that's why an 8 versus 1 seed upset is so rare, because it always comes down to where you seed in the playoffs, and that's what I was trying to say earlier.
Well, that's okay. We'll be patient with you. You still got a couple more minutes. But yeah, I think that Golden State would be a dangerous 6 seed, though. I wouldn't want to be like, for example, the Los Angeles Clippers and have to play them in a 4-on-7. I don't think that they would like that either.
Yeah, but with the Warriors, it's always going to come down to injuries and consistency. And even if it doesn't come down to, you know, even if it doesn't come down to injuries, it's still going to come down to consistency. And when you're playing those matchups in the playoffs and you have a 7-game series, you've got to show up for at least 6 of those games. I mean, And the Warriors right now are only showing up for 4 out of 5 of every 7 of their games, just because, you know, Jermaine O'Neal's going to be injured here. Klay Thompson's not going to show up there. So it's really tough, because I could see them taking a really good team to 7 games, but it's really just going to depend on how well those guys can perform night to night. And again, it just comes down to like the consistency of guys like Klay Thompson, David Lee, and how well they can score.
One thing is clear. Andre Iguodala is not the answer.
Yeah, I mean, because he's just not going to be that aggressive. I mean, at this point in his career, he doesn't like taking it to the rim that often. He just kind of likes staying in the perimeter, shooting threes, helping move the ball. And I think that's beneficial for this team, because, you know, our centers aren't really black holes, but you always love to have more ball movement, and it's good. But he's just not the scorer they used to be. He's not willing to be the scorer they used to be. And you've got to rely on young guys like Klay Thompson, and right now they're not getting it done. So it's just going to come down to whether you can perform. And I look forward to coming on next week and finding out how well he's adjusted, or how well they've held up.
Yeah, that ought to be interesting. There's no doubt about that. I'm interested in the Tuesday night game against Indiana that was played yesterday, but before us. And I'm really interested in the, like I said, the Friday and the Sunday games. Zeb, thank you so much for being on the show. Great stuff as always.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, that was Zeb Benbrook, and you can find him over at welcometoloudcity.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all the guys for making this a great NBA and NFL day. Tomorrow we're going to talk nothing but baseball, little New York Mets baseball, New York Yankees baseball, and Oakland A's baseball. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, My mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.